previously on 24.
Before his death, Jonas Hodges told us that there were other parties involved with him in the creation of this bioweapon.
The FBI has apprehended Tony Almeida. He is a key figure in this plot.
Jonas Hodges was killed outside FBI headquarters. That Miss Taylor might be involved.
Olivia's capable of many things, but I can't believe committing murder is one of them.
I need you to access the digital recording system to see if their conversation was recorded.
What I can't live with is that monster getting away with this.
My operatives are with your daughter. In fact, I'm looking at her right now. You will help Tony Almeida escape, or my people will murder your daughter.
Don't move!
Jack, why?
The people that are working with Tony have operatives with Kim right now. They threaten to kill her if I don't break them out.
People who are watching you, they're our only lead to finding your father. That laptop has the camera that they were using to track me. We may be able to backtrace to the people that have my father.
Your people are going to be able to launch their biological attacks just as they originally planned.
How?
We have Jack. The pathogen's in his organs. We'll be able to harvest everything we need from his body.
Tony believes in what we're doing.
Are you suggesting I meet with him? I'll look Almeida in the eye, and if for any reason I don't like what I see, I can't let him walk out of that meeting alive.
How much longer does he have?
A couple of hours, give or take. The pathogen can survive up to 2 hours after death. In fact, the only sure way to destroy it is by exposure to extreme temperatures above 500 degrees Celsius.
Get him ready to move.
The following takes place between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m.
I'm Howard Gordon. I'm the executive producer and the writer of this episode of 24.
And my name is John Cassar, and I'm also an executive producer, and I directed this final episode. There's relief in that, isn't there?
Tremendous relief and incredulity, actually. I mean, to think what this year has been, John.
It was a bit like a marathon, wasn't it, this year, I think?
Well, it was like a marathon with someone throwing rocks at your head the whole way.
And trying to trip you.
And actually redirecting the sign so you run 6 miles in the wrong direction and then telling you to run back and start all over again.
It's so true. And that's, you know, because of obviously the writer's strike and other things that held us up, and the fact that they, you know, Fox didn't air us for a year, I guess.
Right.
So it just felt like it took forever to do this year.
But, I think we're all extremely proud of where we got to. And I think this is a very fitting moment that you and I are sitting here together watching this last episode.
It truly is.
Emotional. It's been an 8-year, 7 years between us.
Yeah, it's a big part of your life, and not only just on the show and the friends you make and the people you're hanging with, but there's a pride that never left the show, and that's, I think, the great thing, and everyone that worked on it. You know, I don't think anyone was ever coming to work and just, you know, walking through the paces. So
yeah, we left nothing on the table.
No, we really
didn't. Nothing on the field, I should say.
Which meant we bumped heads every once in a while, but that's, I wouldn't have it any other way. I think that's the creative process at work.
Well, I've always described this as a band or a symphony, and everybody. I mean, I think the secret of the show is that we all. The show is always greater than the sum of any of its parts, and
I think, John, agree.
I mean, this is, you know, I can't even say enough to you about what these last years have meant to me.
And back at you for actually giving me the freedom to stretch a little bit, and that's something that not all producer writers do to directors. They sort of keep them under a short leash, but you've never done that, and that's, you know,
we've been pretty honest with each other, and I think I think everybody's been the beneficiary, and I think, you know, Kiefer as well, or maybe even especially. I mean, this has been an amazing collaborative effort, and this episode in particular, there are some very key moments that, you know, all of us can lay claim to.
And really interesting for me too, because, you know, there's so many shows that do the continuing storyline, and I watch a lot of them, and, you know, without mentioning what they are, although the ride is good, it's when you get to the end, are you going to satisfy your audience?
Right.
You don't want to take them on that 22, 24 episode ride just for the end to be, oh, really?
Right.
I watched all that for that?
Right.
And I know you make a huge effort, and all your writers do to end up with what I always call a satisfying ending for the audience. And,
yeah.
And I think we have it here.
It's a meal. And again, if you look even at this whole storyline, the one that we're watching right now, which is the president's daughter and Ethan, and of course, good old standby Aaron Pierce, we moved the furniture around the room every possible way before we settled on this idea. At one point, it was actually Henry Taylor who had hired the assassin. Then it was actually President Taylor who had hired the assassin. And all of it felt overburdened, and we actually wrote scripts reflecting all those possibilities. And then finally, I think we settled on exactly the right thing, which actually turned out to be Ethan Kanan's resurrection in the story.
Yes.
And so the whole thing
came out great.
It came out fantastic.
Yeah,
it
came out great. And then, of course, you know, you've always been able to, which I've always loved about this show, as writers, you've always been able to react to what we were shooting at the time.
Right.
And obviously Sprague came in and did a great job in this part, and you knew you were able to sort of throw this storyline at her, basically, and she was able to support it. And she did a great job.
I mean, well, and also what's a great example of even what Sprague did with it, she's humanized Allison Taylor. She made that family a family in a way that wasn't before.
Yeah.
And you had this dead son, Roger, who,
oddly enough,
this is a continuation of that story.
Yeah, it is, totally.
I've lost
Which we
once.
Set up in Redemption.
Right, right. But this story works because of the fact that they lost one son to her office.
Absolutely.
And, you know, again, that was an accident that you're, you know, sometimes you just hope that, you know, your unconscious is going to, and the muses will smile on you and actually give you something. And it's kind of a high wire act, and you're amazed when you actually make it across the...
Well, you've always said it was a high wire act, and that's how I always describe it. It's amazing at the end. But I think it's also just the idea that there were so many other options that you could have done. Really, it becomes what is the best option.
Right,
and you guys have become really good. You know, you've become, you know, really good at picking the right option. And that's taking in whatever all the other, you know, sides of the stories are and saying, this is the one that's going to be the one that ends our show.
And to any would-be, I think, writers or directors out there, you have to understand that it's really persistence and stubbornness and actually self-criticism, really not being satisfied till you get it right. And it's not any great genius. It's just hard work.
Yes. And then you know, you have to go with your gut. And, you know, that's not always right. I think you guys, your percentages are pretty high.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the other storyline. You know, we had the same thing. This could have gone many different ways. And again, I think Carlos helped us get here because he was doing such great work through the year. And even though it felt wrong to sort of end on Carlos, somehow you turned it around and it ended up being right.
Right. Well, the Carlos thing, too, was like we do this improbable and potentially jump the shark moment of bringing him back. And then once we did in a kind of interesting fashion, he flattened out as a character. And ultimately, we realized one day this was the only way to bookend.
Make it
worthwhile. Otherwise, he'd have been Jack's trusted companion,
exactly.
And it would have been frickin' frack.
Yeah, I was totally behind that because it was such a jump to bring him back. And I think we did it well. But to just bring him back just to be yet another CTU agent, what's the point of that? So now it comes all full circle.
Now I'm reminded of this particular scene, John, because you, me, and Kiefer were in New York for the Redemption premiere when actually Kiefer pitched
this version of this
scene. And it included, I think it was a much more nuanced... it's a bit... labyrinthine, but I think that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy believes...
And it all makes sense when you hear it.
If you pay very, very close attention.
Of course, it would have been nice
if
we knew that in episode one. But I got to tell you, watching this again the other day, it did remind me, because one was just on the air not too long ago in January, that, you know, Rennie Walker says to him right away, why is he doing this? Or Jack says to her, why is he doing it? And she says, for revenge. So we actually gave the story away, and he said he'd never do it for that. So it's really funny that if you really were watching and listening, we told
says,
you the story.
Jack says he would never do it.
Rennie Walker, and Jack says you'd never do it for that.
So she actually knows him better than Jack will allow himself to know her.
Wow. That, you know, the complexity was even as far back as that, and we actually gave you the answer in episode one.
Right.
You're not going to realize that till you get to this episode, of course, but there it was. You know, we've took a million other twists and turns to get there, but it does come right back to that.
What was there in the beginning, right.
which was there. But I think sometimes that's what we do. We lay the obvious out there and twist it around. But then again, this is also a twist, the fact that, you know, you know, he's not going to kill him. He's going to use Jack.
Right. And that was, again, just from the writer's perspective, just this last minute idea that just because the first act felt very flat.
Right.
And it all lives in the details, I guess.
But it's also tough in the last episode because you have so much wrapping up to do.
Right, right.
You know, that you needed one last sort of, you know, action suspense sequence, and this was it. And,
right.
And it made sense. It all made sense that, you know, we set up this guy that was so untouchable that this was his only way of getting to.
It's so tangled. What's so funny is you have to keep in mind Jack is dying. But yeah. He's going to die. You know, first you think Jack's going to die, and he's going to be used as the pathogen. Then Tony goes, "No, you're not. I'm going to use it to kill the woman who killed me. But I'm going to wrap a bomb around you, even though you're dying. I'm going to use you to." It's like, and then you have to keep in mind that you need to keep this guy alive because he's going
to. Yes, that's
so
right.
You know, you have to be
to keep the pathogen alive.
If you're not paying attention, I think the thing.
Well, we're the show that you got to pay attention, and if you do, then there's a satisfaction to it all making sense. It was a great scene between the two of them, too. Obviously, there was some history. I mean... Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a pretty basically two stories in this last episode.
You mean the president and
yeah, pretty much. You know, and then Tony and Jack... And the third, I guess, if you count the fact that he's dying and what goes with that.
His redemption and
but
the
there's,
reconciliation.
There's been more complex ones where we've got with having to wrap up five or six stories in the last episode. So I think this was simpler and easier in a way to wrap it all up and follow.
Yeah. And these scenes are pretty operatic, the ones that are coming up. This whole thing is like, I look at it kind of like an elegy, or it's got a very... except for these first two acts, which are the exciting action part, the rest is really very, very dirge-like.
A little Shakespearean, a little tragic. I mean, it's all of that. Then, the tough part for me, of course, was getting all this and making it credible and setting, you know, this actor, the character up that he had all this protection and there's no way you could get to him.
Right.
It's one thing to say in a script, but then you have to physically see it. You got to see that. You know, Tony couldn't just walk up to him and put a bullet in his head, that he was protected. And that meant searching them and doing all the stuff we did and actually keeping him physically away, which I really liked.
So
you really got a sense of that he really needed Jack.
Who's this guy? I love him.
he's great, actually. They're all pretty good. And Will Patton.
Will had a really hard... I mean, look, we killed Jonas Hodges in 21 and...
John Voight, of course.
John Voight. Very, very hard to...
To top that,
and I think Will stepped in very, very beautifully.
But Will just puts his own spin on it, so right. I think it's not a matter of being better or worse. Will just makes it his own.
Right.
We're all clear, sir.
You know, and you got all the distance, and so that was a bit of a challenge.
In a crazy way, too, the context of this guy having killed, because he reached in as deep as he did and killed Jonas Hodges, it defines how powerful he is.
He is, yeah. And I don't think you ever doubted his power in this. I don't think, because sometimes we go from one to the other and you go, well, the last guy was more powerful.
Right.
But
right.
I really think in this one, you really look at it and say, no, I get that he was controlling Jonas Hodges.
I like this moment, too, that, even though clearly Kara and Tony have got something going on and she says, we don't have to tell him about us, this moment coming up that clearly
shows that they had
something
too. Between
the two of them, there's something else going on. So.
I remember telling him to don't even look at her. You keep your eyes right on, So he's kissing her, or she's kissing him, and he never takes his eyes off of Carlos, which I thought was great, because that's why he's there. And then there's a tension, too, because we did set it up in, the previous episode.
He's going to die. He says, if I don't like this guy, I'll take him out.
He's going to die. So I think the tension is there. And then, of course, Sean Callery doing his magic with the music. I think Sean really steps up in this one, too, because it's very different, some of these scenes for him. And, again, he brings something fresh and new to it. New to it all the time.
First, I want to see Bauer's pathology report.
I have it right here.
One of the biggest challenges, too, is with Kiefer. He had to have these attacks, and he had to be back to being strong again. And trying to find the balance of that was
I know he wasn't very
difficult.
Happy about it.
Yeah, very difficult. I think we again pulled it off.
It pulled it off amazingly, yeah. But I think it was
one of the toughest things
on
to
the
do.
Page than it
yeah,
was
it was in, way yeah. easier on the page than when you're out there trying to find the levels of it. You know, because you still want Jack Bauer to be Jack Bauer.
John Kassar gun battle.
My specialty.
He pulled out the stops on this one.
Yeah. Well, I figured it is the last one. And there's, you know,
I gotta tell you,
all this
really amazing to sort of keep track. I find it astounding the way you do this sometimes where you really, just it's the point of view. I understand everything in the chaos that's happening.
Well,
in just the
it's
right.
It's really the key to this. It's the hardest thing to do, to be telling the stories that Jack, and there was a lot here. Jack sees Tony. Tony saw
sees
them
Kara
running.
And them running.
Right. Then
Renee
he does that as a distraction.
Jack. And then Renee's got to find Jack.
Now you got to see that Tony, that Jack sees Tony going in, so they know where to go.
Right.
It really is just a little puzzle that you have to put together, and you got to make sure when you're out there that day to get all that. So it's fine doing all the, you know, the shoot 'em up. That is what it is. And I have some second unit helps here with some of my guys doing some second unit work. Joseph Hodges directed some of it. With Jeff Caliente, our stunt coordinator, you know. But then it's, you know, making sure everything makes sense. And I wanted one last great action
for Annie.
For Annie.
I got to tell you, it worked like gangbusters. She is so,
you know,
physical. I mean,
she really is. I mean, it's her dance training, obviously. It's all choreography for her.
But she moves really well, and you really believe her with a gun.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about this right from the beginning, and I spent, you know, virtually all of the year, right from the very first episode, making her as close to a female Jack Bauer as we could ever find.
Right.
One of the things that I know a lot of people noticed in the first episode, I think we talked about it a little bit when we did the commentary on that, is that at one point where they go up on the ship together and there's a guy that comes out and they both shoot him exactly at the same time. And I kept saying, no, you were just slightly ahead. And it was, what's the difference? I said, it makes a huge difference. Because if she's ahead of you, that means she's better than Jack Bauer. If you're ahead of her, that means she's not as good as Jack Bauer. It was crucial to me throughout the whole year that she was...
She goes step for step.
Step for step. You know, and I think she totally pulled it off. And as you'll see in the end of this show, I think at some point she becomes Jack Bauer.
Right.
You know, and
right.
That was really important.
Had she ever fired a gun before this? Or was she just...
I don't think so. I don't think... Well, she might have in her personal life, but
right.
I don't think in anything she did as an actress she did. I don't think she played those kind of parts. But as we always do, we put her out with Sterling Rush, and he takes our actors out and takes them to gun ranges and makes sure they're comfortable, and she got very comfortable with it quickly. That's what I call a typical 24. I love that too.
Will Patton.
You know, and as hard as all these are on the day when you're there and it's night and it's crushed for time, there is a joy in putting this blocking together and making it work and trying to tell the story, you know, trying to get what you guys put on the page and flesh it out.
When was the shot? This is a late night scene or?
This was, I think, yeah. It wasn't all nights, but it was inside a factory, so it was probably a day pretending to be night. Or it was pretending to be day, because it was a day scene. But I think it was at the end of that day when we did all the action stuff. You know, so, and again, I think all this location's about four different places. We just used the pieces, you know, found the best locations for what they were. This was a little difficult for me, too, because... You know, we needed Tony to beat this guy up, but not so badly that he had to go to the hospital. So it was a bit of a challenge
to, you know,
because I think we talked about at one point, you know,
beating him to a pulp.
Well, beating him to a pulp or putting a bullet in his hand or, you know, doing our usual our usual thing. But then, you know, he has to go to FBI right after this in real time.
Right.
So,
and be defiant.
And if he was, I mean... They would have obviously taken him to a hospital if he had a bullet in him. So we had to find enough of a beating without making it too much.
You killed my son! My son!
Again, really great performance, I think, by Carlos. And a nice twist. I think that was a...
That was a Kiefer addition.
Yeah, it was a Kiefer addition. I think it was a good one because I did it all because you killed Michelle, it's acceptable, but predictable. As opposed to...
Both of us being, I think, it's awful to say.
Yeah.
Both being husbands and fathers.
Yeah,
somehow
absolutely.
It hit us all as more.
It hit us more.
Yeah.
And it's a last one surprise. You need that one last twist last surprise. That looked like it hurt.
Get him out of here.
this moment coming up, I just love, which I call it the see no evil moment, which is a look at
the way what's it,
Will Patton just sitting there.
That's pretty funny.
It's coming up. It's just the. But here, too, you sequence so many ideas that are discreet. You have Tony, who's being taken away, foaming at the mouth. You have the see no evil moment.
And then I have to set up.
Jack gets sick again. Then she notices Will Patton, who's going to be her.
Yeah, I had to set that up here. Otherwise, it would kind of feel out of the blue
when we
went to it. And then I had to have him
remind the audience, he's dying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, too bad we couldn't like flash a Chiron, remember,
or an asterisk,
or a time clock. Jack's got this much time left.
Again, this is sort of an abstract idea, but the idea that you have to remember this guy has got the key to a deeper and higher conspiracy. Like, it's an abstraction. It's not visceral. And my fear was, is this really going to play? And
yeah, because at this point, really, everything is over. Except for the fact that this guy knows who these guys are and there's a potential of more. And so it's preemptive, really.
Right,
it's just
right.
Getting these guys and stopping.
Which, by the way, is also when we talked about what's about to come up when she actually has to go to the mat with this guy and do whatever it takes. It's actually not in the ticking time bomb scenario.
Very strange.
And we were concerned that that would be...
Wouldn't hold up.
More unseemly and wouldn't hold up ultimately dramatically, but.
But I think preempting it by that conversation that she has with Jack sets it up, because it really is a setup for it's going to be an either or. It's not really the ticking clock that's a decision. It's what are you going to do with the rest of your life, basically. You won't find a shred of material evidence. Which means, of course, she's not an FBI agent in season 8. Who knows?
It doesn't end well for her, I'm afraid.
And that's good.
Yeah.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
It really shouldn't. It's a decision
that comes at a price.
Ending. Yeah, it comes at a price. I mean, and that's something we've always done. Yeah, this was actually just the back of our studio because we ran out of time the day that we were supposed to shoot it. Giving you hydromorphone to make and this was on location. It'll make you a little sleepy, but it will break the pain cycle. Oh, my God. This was graphically very interesting too, with the white light behind them and Jack. This kind of explains 7 years of Jack Bauer, doesn't it? This one conversation.
Thank you.
Do you feel that we went full circle this year? Because I think that's always important for us.
As far as
bookends,
very much so.
You know, from seeing Jack and.
Well, Jack is, you know, everything that was promised in that first episode, which is here's a woman who is whose soul is in the, you know, in the balance, and who is contemplating this awful act, filling in for where Jack can no longer, you know, go. Jack's own, you know, being on trial. Initially, he's on trial with Senator Mayer, but here he's on trial with himself and, frankly, before his maker. I mean, that's really what it's about.
That's
and
right.
Jack has to reconcile himself. Yeah.
I've been wrestling with this one.
I agree. I think that.
Oh, yeah.
I think not since season 5 have we come around completely from where we started to where we ended. Many journeys in between, and that's part of our show, but I think the first one in the I think if you watch the first one and the last one, it would make sense.
Right. Yeah.
It really would.
Well, one of the
you would have missed a lot.
One of the themes, it just repeats itself, and it played out again with the Taylor story, is that the price of doing
all this work decisions
just is ultimately tragic. And as long as you keep hitting that. But Kiefer really found, I think, again, in this particular scene, a real nuanced explanation of... You know, he does come around and say, I couldn't do these things. My heart wouldn't let me. But the laws are more important, and they are what make us better. So he really does come down, oddly enough, on the side of Senator Mayer and President Taylor.
Absolutely. And again, it's interesting because it's maybe because he's dying. Maybe it's because he has to look at it now.
Right,
you know, whereas before he was a...
Defiant,
ticking machine that just kept doing what he does. But obviously now
he's vulnerable and he's got nothing else to.
It's over. And really, it's to me, it's a two-part scene, this and the one in the hospital. This is where it starts and really finishes off in the hospital. And as strong as he is being with her, obviously, he doesn't have that. You know,
well, the trick here, too, and again, I don't know if you found this putting it on its feet, but writing it, it was certainly the idea of how does Jack have this very confessional moment, and yet ultimately the dramatics of the scene were about she's asking him, what should I do? Right. What should I do?
What's the answer?
Right. What's the answer? And I guess the best way he relates it is by telling her about himself.
And that's great, too, because you really want her to make that decision.
Right.
You know, he really can't give her an answer to that. I mean,
don't say anything at all.
I mean, it was a pleasure working with the two of these folks, working together. They really put everything they could into it, every scene.
We really need to go.
It must have been hard for a new actress, you know, a relatively inexperienced person to step in with.
A machine like 24?
A machine like 24 and Kiefer in particular, having to play so much with Kiefer.
Almost the whole year. I mean, she was really beside him for a good part of the whole year. Almost, I'd probably say 80% of her scenes were with Kiefer.
I don't think we've ever taken our time with scenes and allowed them to play and play.
And you know, we always talk about it, but to me, ending the year with Jack shooting the bad guy in the final act, it just doesn't work. There's no satisfaction in that.
No.
He spent the whole year getting the bad guy and then capturing and shooting and getting the bad guy. So to end with Jack shooting the bad guy, I know there's a lot of people that want that as an ending, but it always feels unsatisfying to me. If I was an audience member, I'd think, really? That's it?
Right.
We spent the whole year. So I think you need to get to where we got on this show, where it really is very different as an ending. I think it's probably one of the most different endings we've done. We've been very daring, I think, with our endings. But I think this one is probably one of the most unique, especially on this storyline.
And again, Cherry just, you know,
unbelievable.
Phenomenal.
So solid all the way through.
It's worse than that.
And I like these kind of scenes because these are the kind of scenes I always describe, you know, if you're sitting there with your wife or your girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever, if two of you are watching the scene, I want one person to say, this was the right way, and the other person to say, no, that was the right way. That really is, to me, that when we've done it right.
Right.
You know, if we tell just one point of view, I always think, yeah. But if you have a husband and wife arguing about what decision should have been made, that's when I think 24 is
right, and it's
done
one, and it's one that's supported psychologically and historically. The fact that they've lost one son now because of she's balancing her motherhood and her office, her high office,
and you know,
because of her vulnerability with Roger, she let the wolf back in the lair, and
right,
it fucked
all of
everything
that
up.
And what's great, too, I mean, we can't identify with being the president, but we can identify with being a person in that position with a child and having the choice to save your child or do what's legally right.
Right. Well, I remember it pissed me off when, like, you know, we're sitting here in the read-through, and I think Annie Melville, who's a mother, said, I can't believe
she would do that.
She would do that. I go, well, Annie, she's going to do it.
Yeah.
But she was really upset. And,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, see, it's funny. And that's
right.
That's what we want. I mean,
right.
I know your writing always reflects that. And that's what that's what I'm chasing as a director when I'm out there with the actors in the performance. I want people to see both sides of it. You know, I want them to understand what Cherry's going through, understand her decision, and hate her decision at the same time. And, you know, you get that through, obviously, Colm playing the father, and who's taken, obviously, the other side.
I just killed our son. I know what he did.
I got to say, more even, perhaps, than David Palmer. And again, she wasn't around as long as him, but, man, she held to her guns kind of on everything.
Yeah, she really did. She really did. And I know
character
that, you
remained
know,
intact.
When we were going through the potential scenarios of who killed Jonas Hodges, one of them was that it was her.
Right.
And, you know, that's what I didn't like the most. But, you know, everyone
didn't. Yeah.
Because I just thought by that point, she had really stuck to her guns so well.
That why at this
it
last
It just
moment.
Didn't make
no,
sense
it, right,
that, you
right.
know. Although the potential that the father did it was
But ultimately
good.
It was confusing because our problem here was, okay, in this scene we had in the draft we wrote, it was like, okay, so I'm glad my daughter didn't, but my husband did.
It's like
it didn't add. It kind of was a lateral move rather than
right, because I think we pointed to the daughter the original idea that it pointed to her, so yeah, the audience thought it
right,
was her,
right,
and then you realize it was the last
second. It was a gimmick in all the worst possible ways.
And she was totally motivated. I think she was totally motivated, but I think what really was the best part of all of this is when you tried to have her take it back. That's what changed it.
Right,
for me, that's what changed it.
Right.
Because the second you do that, now again, she's understandable.
Human, right.
She's a human being. She's not this, you know, she's not Jonas Hodges.
Right.
She's not this monster of a villain.
Right.
She's just a person that had a lapse, you know, a little lapse of decision making and got caught on it.
You know, one of those, I don't know who said it, but character is fate or character is destiny, and that sort of character is drama. You know that this woman can't help herself, and again, this guy's, we think about it again, Henry Taylor's earnestness. I mean, he'd been chasing at the beginning of the season the fact that his son didn't kill himself, so you know how rooted he was in this idea of losing now a second child is
because he couldn't accept losing the first child.
Right.
I mean, he wouldn't let it go.
And also, what's an interesting moment here is he blames her for...
Yes,
this is where the first
really
time
amazing.
He says it's your fault.
Yeah. And I think that's what hurts her almost more than anything.
Right.
To me, it's always in the scene was the fact that, you know, virtually they laid the blame on everything to her.
I love also that just Aaron Pierce just comes in as this sort of like angel.
Yeah.
He's always the guy promoting... When you think about it, he's kind of the hidden hero of the entire series.
He really is. He truly is. Although this year he was a true hero, you know, in the White House raid, he really kind of stepped up.
But in season five,
in the attack of the limo, he was there to save.
That's right. But also at the very end, he's the guy who
he's
Jack
the guy at the end.
Rolls up.
Yeah.
I'll be there in
20. Yeah, he just kind of comes in. He truly is the knight on the white horse.
Excuse me, Chloe.
This was tough to get into the show just because of time. We were so long, and it's one of those scenes where you go, you really don't need it because it doesn't push the story that far forward, but you can't not wrap up these characters.
That's a coda between these two characters.
It's impossible. Again, it was a storyline that ran through the whole year, the two of them together.
But I think this scene was actually necessary in the show because the show's so fucking heavy, every other scene, that you
want
to take a breath.
Yeah,
and...
it's true. And it was a little longer, so we did trim it. But I'm so happy it made it because it's the kind of scene that you might not miss right away, but 2 days later you go, hey, what happened to Chloe?
Yeah,
you notice it later, I think. And again, this one was really tough for me to get in, just again because of time. We were so tight on this.
We never used the shot, John. The shot that I remember going down there, which was the Allison Taylor alone in her office at the end. It was because
we didn't do boxes.
Those
were all my final boxes for everybody. It's not the first time we haven't done boxes.
Was that photograph composited, or was that
we shot that. We actually shot that on the very last day of shooting.
Oh, really?
We actually got them all together. We actually brought this Eric Lively, who played the son, back, which was very funny because it was the first time that Sprague had met him. And I was there. She said, hi, I'm your sister.
That's very funny.
So they met on the last day to take a picture, basically, which is, of course, how it works in the film world. But it was very important for me to put that in, to have her look at that picture, because I need the audience to be going, you know, to remind the audience, what are you going to do? I mean, there's the decision. And I wanted it to lean a little bit towards, there's no way I'm going to wreck my family. You know,
right.
If
right.
anything, you know, in the surprise
of it all.
Well,
that's why that moment you did at the end, which was not scripted, which I thought was a brilliant addition, which was the kisses at the beginning.
Yeah, that's Cherry.
Really, that's
that was
great.
Cherry. Yeah, that was Cherry's idea, and I loved it right away. I just thought, again, it leaned, because it went towards what I was trying to do, which is lean it towards, there's no way I'm going to give you up, you know, and then she turns it.
And this, of course, is going to turn, you know, everybody upside down, I think.
Yeah, this will be interesting, I think, to see, you know, when this airs, what people are going to say about the scene.
I honestly hope
think
that
about the scene.
They don't. You know, whatever people are going to make of it, what they will. I love it. I think it's really.
I think it's important too.
Really fantastic.
And it's grounded. I mean, it's grounded in the fact that he did meet this guy, that he did treat him badly when he first met him. He did profile him in a way, and
this guy absolves him, of all people, he takes absolution from an imam.
Again, it's to me, absolute full circle from where we started.
Mm-hmm.
It totally worked. With all his flaws. And I remember too when I guess it was episode 16 when we decided to around that those group of episodes when Jack was going to, you know, contract the disease virus, and we knew that by the end of it he was going to die. It made it very difficult because we knew that it wasn't going to be some big action ending.
Right.
We knew that we were going to have to somehow deal with the fact that Jack is dying. So it locked us in that early, you know, which is good in a way because we had time to think about it. We had time to keep working towards, you know, where Jack would be in that last scene.
But the moment, interestingly, and the more pedestrian moment, which comes through, and I think, again, this is where I think the collaboration works well, is that we knew Kim as the cure.
That's why we brought her
Kim
in,
as basically. Cure is, was a very organic way and a way that I think answers some of the problems that fans and even some people inside the show have had with her as a character. And it came out really well. And I guess I will tell you this, the network, till the very last day, were saying, please have Jack open his eyes or close his hand around Kim. And I think the whole point of this show was that the very end was played between with an unconscious Jack. And that, again, was Kiefer. He goes, no fucking way am I going to...
Yeah. Well, because, again, people forget that Jack Bauer is the kind of guy, if he says blue, it's blue.
Right.
You know, and basically...
But it's even counterintuitive. But the problem with it is that it was a very counterintuitive moment, knowing none of us, if we were dying, even if we've been estranged from our daughters and our daughter comes for having forgiven us...
Yeah, save
and
you.
Says, A, can save you, but B, wants to be there for the few remaining days you might have.
Right.
The idea of sending her away is a very Jack Bauer thing that was not relatable.
Yeah,
you know,
for people.
But if you understand Jack, you know it's...
It totally makes sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. Yeah, and his objection was, of course, you know, if I send her away once, why would I accept her now?
Right.
You know, it's even worse now.
Right, so put him in a morphine-induced coma and have her make the adult decision to accept the risk and defy him.
Yeah, and I've got to tell you, it was important to me, too, at the end, because the last thing she says, I think there was even more written. I think we cut it out at some point. But the fact that she says, I won't let you go, to me, that's the audience.
Right.
And the audience going, you know what, we're not tired of Jack yet.
We're not ready to
let you go yet. You know, the way she said it really felt like it was a chorus of like a whole bunch of people going, no, not yet. You know, close. We've done this a few times, but not yet.
Right.
You know.
To enforce the Constitution.
And of course, the whole Kim story, the biggest part, especially in episode 23, was keeping her proactive.
Right.
You know, we knew that, you know, to bring her back, she was going to be used by, you know, the bad guys. But we really, we were very aware not to put a gun to her head and just use her as a victim and to keep her proactive and do all the things we had to do in that sequence in the airport.
And ultimately, she actually is the one who locates her father.
Him twice, really.
Yeah, right.
You know, she saves him once because they find him and are able to attack where he is. And then obviously, well, we don't know whether she's going to save him at the end. That's a mystery. I can't wait to see season 8.
As of now, I don't think Jack's coming around.
No. You know, they're going to listen to this. It'll be on all the boards. Oh, well. Again, this is early for us. It's still being rewriting season 8 as we're doing this commentary. So who knows?
I wish I were writing season 8. I'm thinking of season 8.
And then, of course, here's the big decision. There's also a scene coming up that we had to cut out the first go around as you're, you know, the first pass. Obviously, you try to find scenes that aren't crucial to the storytelling. It was the scene where she came back out in the hallway and she met Ethan.
It's still in there.
It is in there, and I just want to bring it up because I'm so happy it's in there. Because once again, it's about the fact that she lost everything, but there's this great moment where you see that, you know, after all that, she's still the president of the United States. She gets back to business.
Yeah, it was a very important moment.
And she almost marches out of the shot, you know, with her head up high after being in sort of, you know, this defeated, crouched, you know, body language, you know, being crouched and defeated. And her head comes up and she storms out of the scene because after all is said and done, these people, and I'm imagining that they have to do this, not that I know anything personally, but that, you know, they have to put all that family, the family crisis aside and go back to being the president of the United States. I mean, look at her body language.
I love the composition
here.
Of this shot. There was this echoed an earlier shot in the season where she was left.
Yes, that's true, actually.
But this is really...
You know, but the body language, I mean, her shoulders, and she's just totally crushed. She's lost everything, you know. And then the one guy, of course, that...
Allison?
And again, this is a character who, by the way, I think was fairly anemic at the beginning, not through any fault of his own, through, you know,
the nature of what that character does.
We weren't really writing much. And I mean, even for Taylor, I think she acquitted herself remarkably, but the stuff was policy stuff and sort of just wasn't. Now she is a three-dimensional, you know, flesh and blood human being, a mother, a wife, and a president.
I understand completely.
And it's interesting because I wouldn't think that Ethan would be the guy that would pull her out of this. You know, but that's at the end of the day.
Right. Well, it's funny because the two actors had told me that they had this, you know, I guess they had their histories that were never reflected on the page, but I think came to home to roost.
I really don't.
But I think we did reflect it when he retired. He has this great line about
dreams. By then we had. But I mean, the first eight episodes, he's a cipher.
But I mean, she couldn't be lower. I mean, this is her lowest point in the 24 episodes.
I don't know how she does it, to be honest.
She's quite amazing.
She just conducts you from one moment to the next.
And this is
and the two of them, by the way, have just chemistry. I don't know what that chemistry. It's just.
I mean, for the first time out. But this change for an actor to go from what she's doing here, you know, to
composure.
To composure, but in a way, and there's still strength in the way she moves out and her chin's up. It's so important. Right. That scene to me is so important.
I agree.
And then this whole sequence to me is actually frightening how she channels. It's virtually to me like, you know, Jack's spirit. That's why I like that reflection. It is kind of like a spirit. It's like Jack's spirit jumped out of his body, you know, as they gave him the last shot and landed.
In a very attractive, very comely.
Landed in a nice body. Landed in Annie's body.
Woods is on his way to pick up Wilson. You need to sign the transfer documents.
I just heard that she's People Magazine's 50 most beautiful people.
We knew that, though, a long time ago. People just caught up to us.
Exactly.
But again, you're just an absolutely wonderful actress from day one. Was always there, always putting in the work.
What are you doing?
And, you know, this is also tough because you don't want to do it in a way where you want her to be channeling Jack Barry. You don't want her to be imitating him in any which way.
Right.
You know, you really want to believe it's her. And just this move here alone. And the... Now, that's the Jack Bauer. Do it now. Now.
And again, using Janice as the Greek chorus of conscience, you know, which she has been throughout the year.
And she truly has, right from episode
absolutely.
One. Yeah.
And we kind of really pressed our bet in the late episode 20, in the mid-early 20s, when she doesn't want to racially profile and,
yes, absolutely.
And do that stuff. So
yeah.
She's
pretty consistent. Pretty consistent through the whole year.
And then she invokes Larry, which of course...
Which is great.
You know, and Larry is represented in the badge, and she puts the badge down, and...
Look at that look. There's no going back. And to me, again, the scene that gets you completely full circle from when she stormed in to the Senate hearing and grabbed Jack and was doing everything by the book, and this is what one day with Jack Barrow will do to you.
Right. And this look is just great.
And again, this was tough because he's such a tough guy, but you could just see in his eyes that...
Oh, fuck.
Uh-oh. This is not good. Again, you need this caliber of actor to pull those kind of...
I remember, John, we described this thing. I mean, this is exactly
absolutely.
What we
this
wanted
is
from
exactly
the
what you wanted. That was very clear. I also like this. This is another little subtle moment that we played with.
We induced a coma to help.
When Kim looks at this guy, who of course,
who the fuck are you?
Who
what are you?
You
doing here?
Look at her face. It's actually just again, just a subtle kind of, who are you? Of all the people that are standing here,
and she processes it.
You can see
her
just kind of processing,
it,
right?
And I can tell you, he's accepted what is happening.
You know, she doesn't accept him completely. She can't. I mean, there's no way. She has no idea who he is, and. And so that I just love that it was an interesting little triangle here of these, you know, the people that could save him and people that are saving his soul and the people who are trying to save him physically. It's kind of interesting.
No,
then I want to do it. The risk.
I understand.
And it's strong. You know, Kim. Alicia's just such a wonderful, wonderful actress, and she just does such a good job with all this. It's tough work, and she did a great job. It's fun to have Christina back too, from year three, I think.
When she's not changed.
No, she hasn't really. And you know, I talked to Joseph too about this room and wanting this window here so we can actually look in to see it. And we also decided to turn the lights down too in this final sequence. You know, I think they would, you know, it's not that unrealistic. I think they would do something like that. But just the silhouette of him standing in the window, I thought was just really, look at him. He's right in between them. You know, being observed from the outside is kind of fun. In another year, just in time to start writing 8. If people only knew the treadmill that you're on.
Well, that's why watching every episode is filled with melancholy, because it just means.
Absolutely.
But I'm not ready to let you go.
And again, I love that last line. Although I keep thinking, wake up, wake up.
There it is.